personally supervised his father's training and education, wondering if the adult that finally emerged from all this would be the same father he had known. Gradually, Saito's mind returned. He was the same man, and yet not. The first hint of Saito's different personality came the morning that the psychologists finally pronounced their work was finished. Nobu brought his father to his office in New Kyoto. It had once been Saito's office, the center of power for a world-spanning corporation. Saito strode into the office alongside his son, beaming cheerfully, until the door closed and they were alone. He looked around curiously at the big, curved desk, the plush chairs, the silk prints on the walls. "You haven't changed it at all." Nobuhiko had carefully returned the office to the way it had been when his father was declared clinically dead. Saito peered into his son's eyes, studied his face for long, silent moments. "My God," he said at last, "it's like looking into a mirror." Indeed, they looked more like twin brothers than father and son. Both men were stocky, with round faces and deep-set almond eyes. Both wore Western business suits of identical sky blue. Saito threw back his head and laughed, a hearty, full-throated bellow of amusement. "You're as old as I am." Automatically, Nobu replied, "But not as wise." Saito clapped his son on the shoulder. "They've told me about the problems you faced and dealt with. I doubt that I could have done better." Nobu stood in the middle of the office. His father looked just as he remembered him. It was something of a shock for Nobu to realize that he himself looked almost exactly the same. Feeling nervous, uncertain, Nobu gestured toward the sweeping curve of the desk. "It's been waiting for you, father." Saito grew serious. "No, it's your desk now. This is your office." "But I'm finished with it," said Saito. "I decided to retire. I have no intention of returning to work." Nobu blinked with surprise. "But all this is yours, father. It's..." Shaking his head, Saito repeated, "I'm finished with it. The world I once lived in is gone. All the people I knew, all my friends, they're all gone." "They're not all dead." "No. But the years have changed them so much I would hardly recognize them. I don't want to try to relive a life that once was. The world moves on. This corporation is your responsibility now, Nobu. I don't want any part of it." Stunned, Nobuhiko asked, "But what will you do?" The answer was that Saito retired to a monastery high in the Himalayas, to a life of study and contemplation. Nobu could not have been more shocked if his father had become a serial killer or a child molester. But even though he filled his days by writing his memoirs, or perhaps because he began to write his memoirs, Saito Yamagata could not entirely divorce himself from the corporation on which he had spent his first life. Whenever his son called him, Saito listened greedily to the events of the hour, then offered Nobuhiko the gift of his advice. At first, Nobu was wary of his father's simmering interest in the corporation. Gradually, however, he came to cherish his father's wisdom, and even to rely upon it. So now, Nobuhiko flew to Nepal in a corporate tilt-rotor. Video phone calls were all well and good, but still nothing could replace a personal visit, face-to-face, where no one could possibly eavesdrop. It was bitingly cold in the mountains. Swirls of snow swept around the plane when it touched down lightly on the crushed gravel pad outside the monastery's gray stone walls. Despite his hooded parka, Nobu was thoroughly chilled by the time a saffron-robed lama conducted him through the thick wooden door and into a hallway paneled with polished oak. Saito was waiting for him in a small room with a single window that looked out on the snow-clad mountains. A low, lacquered table and two kneeling mats were the only furniture, but there was a warm fire crackling in the soot-blackened fireplace. Nobu folded his parka neatly on the floor and stood before the fireplace, gratefully absorbing its warmth. Wearing a kimono of deep blue decorated with the flying crane emblem of the Yamagata family, his father waited in patient silence until Nobu grew uneasy and turned from the fireplace. Then Saito greeted his son with a full-bodied embrace that delighted Nobu, even though it squeezed the breath out of him. Altitude and bear hugs did not mix well. "You've lost a kilo or two," said the elder Yamagata, holding his son at arm's length. "That's good." Nobuhiko dipped his chin in acknowledgement. Saito slapped his bulging belly. "I've found them, and more," he laughed heartily. Wondering how his father could gain weight in a monastery, Nobu said, "I spoke with Martin Humphreys. He apparently does not know that we are backing the Africans." "And Asro?" "Pancho Lane launched an investigation of Nairobi Industries. It has found nothing to tie us to them." "Good," said Saito, as he knelt slowly, carefully on one of the mats. It rustled slightly beneath his weight. "It's better if no one realizes we are returning to space operations." "I still don't understand why we must keep our interest in Nairobi Industries a secret." Nobu knelt on the other mat, close enough to his father to smell the older man's aftershave lotion. Saito patted his son's knee. "Humphrey Space Systems and Astro Corporation are fighting for control of the belt, aren't they? If they knew Yamagata will soon be competing against them, they might combine their forces against us." Nobu shook his head. "Pancho Lane despises Humphreys, and he feels the same about her." With a knowing grin, Saito countered, "They might hate each other, but their personal feelings wouldn't stop them from uniting to prevent us from establishing ourselves in the belt. Personal emotions take a backseat to business, son." "Perhaps," Nobu conceded. "Work through the Africans," Saito counseled. "Let Nairobi Industries establish a base on the moon. That will be our foothold. The prospecting ships and ore carriers they send to the asteroid belt will return profits to Yamagata." "One-third of our profits go to Humphreys," Nobu reminded his father. The hardest thing that Nobuhiko had been forced to tell his father was that Humphreys had bought into Yamagata Corporation. Back in the days when the greenhouse cliff had struck so hard that the corporation was teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, Humphreys owned a third of Yamagata Corporation and was constantly scheming to gain more. It had taken every gram of Nobu's courage to tell his father that. He feared it would break the old man's heart. Instead, Saito had accepted the news stoically, saying only, "Humphreys took advantage of the situation." With some heat, Nobu growled, "He took advantage of the catastrophes that struck Japan." "Yes," Saito said, his voice a low rumble. "We'll have to do something about that eventually." Nobu had never felt so relieved, so grateful. Now Saito sat back on his heels and gazed out at the snowy mountains. "Our first objective is to make certain that neither Humphreys nor Astro Corporation learns that we aim to establish ourselves in the belt." Nobu nodded his acknowledgement. "The best way to accomplish that," Saito went on, "is to keep them both busy fighting each other. We've already destroyed a few automated freighters of both corporations, as you suggested. Pancho Lane blames Humphreys, of course, and he blames her." "Good," Saito grunted. "But they're not actually fighting. There's a bit of piracy in the belt, mainly by the man Fuchs, but he is one lone madman, without support from anyone except a few of the rock rats." "He may be the key to the situation, then." "I don't understand how," said Nobu. "Let me think about it," Saito replied. "Our objective remains to keep HSS and Astro focused on each other. Fuchs could be an important element in this. Properly exploited, he could help us to stir this simmering enmity between Pancho Lane and Martin Humphreys into a major conflict." "A major conflict?" Nobu asked, alarmed. "You mean actual fighting? War?" "Business is a form of warfare, son. If Asro and Humphreys fight each other out there in the belt, it can only be to our benefit.